At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I am your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Break. All right, everybody, welcome to Holy War Week, week 8 of the college football season. This is it, the big one, the one we've all been waiting for. Number 22, Utah versus number 18, Brigham Young. I don't think there has been any more anticipation for a Utah-BYU game than there has been this week. This episode, by the way, is coming out very late in the week, and for that I apologize profusely. I had some segments I thought we were going to be able to get done, and a couple of them just sort of fell through, and I had to call some audibles, so I hope this episode gets it done for you. We're going to have a slightly different episode this week as we've spent a lot of time getting to know these two teams so far this season. We'll have a special segment later, which I'm very excited for. Anyway, let's go ahead and dive in. Ahead of this year's iteration of the Holy War, there's a lot of anticipation. And with so much riding on the table, and with BYU and Utah once again in the same conference, starting at least last year, tomorrow's game holds weight for a number of reasons. Up for grabs is the potential for change in the tide of dominance in the series, Big 12 championship aspirations, and a clearer picture of the road to the first college football playoff berth for either of these teams. Saturday night's game, holds a lot of value for these two programs. The Cougars are a perfect 6-0, though many attribute their perfect record to a less than stellar schedule. Meanwhile, the Utes hold an impressive 5-1 record and get credit for quote-unquote bigger wins over teams like UCLA and ASU. They're also slightly boosted by their only blemish on the season, a loss against Big 12 favorite Texas Tech in Week 4. This is one of the most common rationales this week for posting BYU as an underdog to Utah, despite playing at home and at night, where the Cougars are 24-3 over the last 27 contests at Lavelle Edwards Stadium after dark. It's my contention, though, that the Utes and Cougs schedules thus far have actually been very, very similar. Let's look at them so far. Each team has won a game against a California team who left the Pac-12 for another conference and is a shadow of what they once were in UCLA and Stanford. An FCS team from the West Coast who they scored 60 points against in Cal Poly and Portland State. A Group of Five team who's never really had an amazing, amazing year, but they've had some good years and doesn't pose much of a challenge. Wyoming for Utah and ECU for BYU, though both teams struggled more than they should have in those games. West Virginia, a common opponent, where both teams won by multiple scores, but weren't without their mistakes. A game against a Big 12 foe, where a slow start really hurt them, and the defense had to keep them in the game while the offense tried to catch up. In the case of Utah, this was against Texas Tech, and the offense eventually did nothing, and the defense caved due to fatigue and gave up 24 points in the final 8 minutes. In the case of BYU, this was against Colorado. Eventually, the offense did do something, and the Cougs completed the comeback and held off the Buffs in a game that came down to the wire. Now, Colorado is not Texas Tech, I acknowledge that. But even though Colorado is only 3-4, their Power 4 opponents are a combined 26-5. And they just beat the other Big 12 favorite, Iowa State, last weekend. I believe that Colorado is better than their record shows, and I don't think they're a bad football team. Definitely not as good as Texas Tech, but like I said, not as bad as their record suggests. Utah and BYU's schedules also include a win over a 4-1 team from the state of Arizona. Now, Utah's win over ASU last weekend seems far more impressive based on the fact that ASU was ranked in the top 20 and they won by 32 points. A couple of factors that I believe only slightly lower the value of that one. of that win, excuse me. Number one, Sam Leavitt doesn't play for ASU in that game. Now, does that change the outcome of the game? I don't think so. I still think Utah comes away with a win by multiple scores, but I do think that Sam Leavitt does a lot more with his legs than ASU's backup quarterback did against Utah, and I think Utah maybe wins by 10 or 12 instead of by 32 points. Plus, when you compare losses from ASU to Arizona, BYU's opponent of last week, ASU's only loss came against unranked Mississippi State, which is arguably less impressive than Arizona, whose lone loss came against the Big 12's previous favorite for the college football playoff, the previously unbeaten Iowa State Cyclones. It wouldn't be unfair to say that maybe ASU benefited from last season's success in the preseason rankings, helping them kind of climb that ladder faster than Arizona, who had to earn respect after having a down year last year. I think BYU's double overtime win over a healthy Arizona team with Noah Fifita playing at the helm, playing in top form, that could arguably also have been a top 25 ranked team. And I think that win over Arizona for BYU is almost as impressive as Utah's beatdown over ASU. So you can see the similarities in the schedule, right? All these very, very similar teams, you know, former California team, you know, FCS team, FBS team, West Virginia, and then a couple Big 12 opponents, including one from Arizona, each. Very, very similar schedule when you look at it. I do think Utah has had the stronger schedule. They have had two slightly more impressive games, including that game against ASU and the game against Texas Tech. But I also do think that the rest of Utah's schedule hasn't been any more impressive than BYU's schedule, and in fact has essentially been pretty much the exact same thus far. A couple of things that stand out to me with both of these teams, kind of how their year has gone so far. In regard to Utah, beside the Texas Tech game, which obviously they lost, the Utes have been playing at an extremely high level. They have had their issues, but all of their wins have come by multiple scores, and their backups have gotten lots of reps, which bodes well if Utah were to sustain any major injuries this Saturday night. In regard to BYU, the Cougs have had two games thus far, where they've had their toughness tested, and they have answered that call. They gave up 14 points quick to Colorado in the first quarter, and they gave up 24 unanswered points to Arizona going into that fourth quarter. Most teams are going to lose those games where you do that. If you give up 14 points in the first quarter to go down 14-0, or you go up 14-0 against Arizona, and then you give up 24 points unanswered, most teams are going to lose those games. But BYU has had the chance to face adversity, make adjustments at halftime, and calmly fight their way back into the game twice this year. I think that goes a long way towards developing unity, camaraderie, toughness, and grit. All the things that go a long, long way in a rivalry game with this much hype. I can't think of a year where this game has been more evenly balanced. Let's look at some statistics offensively, for example. Utah is rushing the ball at a clip of 248 yards per game, which is good for 8th in the country, while BYU averages 238 yards per game, just 10 yards less, good for number 11 in the country. So it's number 8 and number 11 as far as rushing the ball. The Utes gain 211 yards per game through the air, which is good for 87th in the FBS, and the Cougs average just 1 yard less per game, if passing 210 yards, which puts them at 90th. Utah ranks 16th in the nation with just under 40 points per game, while BYU ranks 21st with 37.5 points, just 2.5 points less per game. It's the same story defensively, too. Both teams are top 20 in yards allowed per game. BYU allows 263, while Utah allows 30 yards more, 293. And the two teams are right next to each other in points allowed per game. Utah at number 11 with 13.83 points, and BYU at number 12 with 14.67 points, less than 1 point difference. The two teams are also top 20 in passing yards allowed. Utah gives up about 154, BYU gives up 159. The only category that either team has a real edge on is BYU has an edge in the rushing defense. BYU ranks 23rd, allowing 104 yards per game, while Utah has given up almost 140. tied for number 61 in the country. I don't know that I can say how many points are going to be scored in this game, but whether it's a low-scoring game, something like 7-7, or a high-scoring game, 35-35, something like that, I'm going to wager that this game, like so many holy wars in years past, will come down to the wire and will likely be a one-score game or less either way. Anyway, now for our scouting report this week. And with it being a holy war week, I have kind of a special segment here for you where I sat down with one of the best defensive minds in the state of Utah, a mentor, a friend, a former colleague, and one of my former coaches, Coach Gary Bowers. We chatted on the phone for a little bit about what you might expect to see on the defensive side of the ball for both Utah and BYU tomorrow night. So here is that conversation for you guys with Coach Bowers. All right, you guys, with it being Holy War Week, we're going to do a special segment today, sort of a coordinator's corner, if you will. I'm honored to have special guest Coach Gary Bowers on the phone with me. Welcome, Coach.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So for the listeners, Coach Bowers, former defensive coordinator at East High School, was there from 2010 to 2022. Is that right?
Yeah, 13 years up there. Defensive coordinator at Park City for 5 years before that. And then I coached 30 years total.
Wow. So. Incredible. When you were there with the Leopards, you led them to, with the time you were there a little bit shorter than Brandon, who just retired, Brandon Matic. Record of 117-47, which is a good for 71% win percentage. You had seven incredible trips to the Utah, either 4A, 5A, or 6A state championships. That's a lot of trips, depending on the year.
It was a good time.
You guys repeated a state championship from 2015 to 2016.
Yes, back to back.
As I mentioned, head coach Brandon Matic is now retired as well. You guys sent dozens of kids to D1 programs across the country, and you probably have more than this, but I know at least one former player that you guys had is actively playing in the NFL, running back Jalen Warren, who's currently rostered and running the ball for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you have any more guys in the league right now?
So Jalen, yeah, he's with the Steelers. We have also Taki Taimani, who is on the practice squad with the Vikings.
Okay. There you go.
But I think that's all that's doing it right now. Siaka Ika was with the Chiefs at the end of last year on their practice squad, but I'm not sure if he's been picked up by anybody right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, multiple guys sent to the league. That's so impressive. As you mentioned, you and Coach Matic coached at Park City for 5 years, led the Miners to a 39-16 record, 39-18 record. It's a 66 win percentage, including two 10-plus win seasons and two trips to the 3A state semifinals. I personally, Coach, think that your best year was the year you had in 2009 at Park City, but that's just my unbiased opinion. before we dive into the scouting report for Utah and BYU, tell me just a little bit about what your time was like coaching in Utah.
Well, it was awesome. When we were at East, we were very fortunate to be able to go out of state and play a bunch of teams. We had a bunch of teams come in state to play us. So it wasn't just Utah teams that we were always up against. We always had somebody from out of state. We went to Concord, California, and played De La Salle.
And you guys won that game.
We beat them on a last-second field goal. And that was their first loss at home in the last 22 years, I think it was.
Yeah. For those of you that are listening and maybe new to football, De La Salle High School out in California is one of the most storied high school football programs in the country. And the East Leopards, they went out and took it to them. So very, very impressive. And that interstate kind of game trend was one that you and Coach Matic started at Park City when we played against Star Valley High School. We wouldn't play them at Weber State.
Yeah, a little bit different competition at Star Valley than a little bit easier.
Exactly, a little bit easier. All right, well, hey, that's awesome. In today's conversation, Coach, I wanted to see kind of what, you know, a seasoned professional could tell my listeners about Utah's defense and a little bit about BYU's defense as much as you're able to. The process that I use in making these kind of listenable scouting reports came from you and Coach Matic. I'm literally just an armchair coordinator sitting in an actual armchair. So I wanted to make this podcast because I found myself, you know, as a former player, is you're getting ready to watch a Utah game or a BYU game. I wanted to know more about the squads that my team would be going up against. I wanted to be more prepared for what types of offensive or defensive schemes I'd see that day, just like, you know, back when I was in Park City. So I wanted to also make a show that would help instruct kind of the more casual football fan with maybe less understanding of the mechanics of the game. So that's kind of the feel we're going for today. What can we expect to see from Utah defensively?
Well, I don't think much changes with Utah. I mean, it has been this way ever since Coach Whittingham was the defensive coordinator up there, and everybody that's come after him has just kind of carried on his legacy. You're going to get a lot of man-to-man coverage. The defensive line is always very good. And then they will bring pressures a lot from everywhere. Linebackers, safeties, corners, which makes it tough on offenses, but it also makes it a little easier on offenses because they pretty much know what kind of coverage they're going to get because Utah's such a man-to-man team.
Yeah.
They are running a lot more zone nowadays. I think just because of the temperature of the conference and everything in college football, where you just can't run the same thing over and over again because
right. The
offensive coordinators are so good everywhere that they'll be able to know what you're in and pick it up.
Yeah.
So Saturday when they go down to Provo, I'm sure that Coach Roderick, the offensive coordinator of BYU, understands that. I mean, BYU has their offensive coordinator that was at Utah with Coach Whittingham, their defensive coordinator that was at Utah with Coach Whittingham, their head coach was at Utah with Whittingham. Sione Pulha, their defensive line coach, was at Utah.
Yeah.
And then Kalani Sitake's brother was at Utah. So they all know the schemes and everything that they did back then, of course.
Yeah.
And Coach Scout.
And kind of vice versa. Coach Mark Atuaya, who's at the U right now, he was my running back coach when I was at BYU. So there's just tons of crossover. I mean, it's crazy. It's a family rivalry, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's very much family. I have always been a Utah fan and went to the University of Utah. But now I have two nephews that are playing down at BYU. One is a backup quarterback and one is a receiver. So
gotcha. It's
definitely a family affair everywhere.
Gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, with Utah's defensive identity, really strong up front. They kind of pride themselves on saying, hey, we're not going to do anything really special. You know, we'll tell you what's coming and we dare you to stop us. What do you think are the Utes' biggest defensive strengths, you know, from that perspective?
Definitely their defensive line and their linebackers, I think. Mm-hmm. Their safeties and corners are, I think, better this year than they were the last couple of years. So that helps a little bit, but the defensive line and everything that Coach Scally does up front with different pressures and stuff is probably the best part, which makes their defensive backs better because they get pressure on the quarterback. Ball has to come out earlier, and so they know when it's coming, and they can make plays on it and hopefully do something.
So what is it, you know, if you're talking to someone who's maybe a little bit newer to football, what is it about the defensive line that makes them such a massive strength for the Utes?
Well, the strength that you mentioned is part of it. They're always usually strong and they're always usually fast. Big, fast guys are hard to block. They're hard to take care of up front because they've got such a good get off, which makes it hard on offensive linemen that are usually bigger, but they're usually a little bit slower on the offensive line. And that's just because they have to run block and all that stuff. right. which makes it better for offensive linemen to be a little bit bigger.
Right.
So that's always a challenge for offenses when they come up against a defensive line that is big and fast.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you mentioned, you know, maybe if there was a weak point in the University of Utah's defense, it might be the defensive backs. What is it that they have to improve on? What makes them kind of the weaker link if there is a weak link?
When I say the weaker link, I don't think they are weak at any meet by any means.
I would totally agree.
Just comparatively to their defensive line and linebackers, that's the core,
right?
Which makes it a lot easier on the defensive backs.
I get you.
Playing man-to-man in full of football is hard as a defensive back because the offense knows where they're running. They're knowing exactly when the ball is supposed to come out. Everything on the defensive end, on the backside with the defensive backs and safeties, is all reactionary. So I think corner especially is the hardest position to play on a football field.
I would agree
with that.
Because
you're out on an island. You have to react. You have to be quick. You have to be smart. And Utah has those players now. But it's just always hard to play man-to-man football all the time.
Yeah.
Because you're always running. And you can get worn out. You can get tired. And it's just mentally and physically draining to play those tough positions.
So from a defensive coordinator's perspective, if it's that difficult to play cover one, why do you think that Coach Scally and Coach Witt focus so much on doing it? Why is it so much a part of their identity?
Well, I think part of it is because they like to bring pressure. They like to bring five or six men after the quarterback. That also helps the running game because you can plug all the gaps that the runners want to try to run through. Hmm. And then if you can get pressure and get the ball out quick, then your defensive backs can stay with receivers for that time. If you're just sitting back and not getting pressure on the quarterback and he has all the time in the world, it's very, very hard to stay with the receiver for all that time and be consistent in stopping passes like that.
Gotcha.
But I think it's definitely because of the style that they like to play with, which is a pressure defense. But they've got guys to, I think, hang with most people, and they've showed that, except maybe for the Texas Tech game, that they can play with anybody.
Gotcha. Well, very cool. So then going down this weekend, down to Provo, the team down south, as you guys like to call them, what are the defensive keys of the game for Utah?
I think one of the biggest things is going to be stopping their quarterback because he's come out and said that he's a linebacker at heart. That's why he wears number 47.
Yeah.
That's what he wore in high school or whatever.
Yeah.
And he likes to run the ball. He likes to hit people. And BYU uses him well running the ball too with their different schemes.
Yeah,
he's also got a great arm.
Yeah, he carried it 22 times last game, which is I think almost more than I had in my entire senior year.
Well, triple option is a little bit different.
That's true. Okay, so stopping the quarterback, anything else that the Utes need to pay attention to?
Well, of course you have, their running backs are always good. Their running game's good. Yeah, their offensive line's always good. Yep. Chase Roberts is their go-to guy, number two, I think he is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably their leading receiver for BYU down there. I don't pay a lot of attention to their offense.
Yeah.
Besides watching my nephew, but
gotcha.
They like to throw the ball around just like they always have ever since Coach Edwards was down there. So
yeah, what is it about? You mentioned having a little bit of familiarity with Aaron Roderick and kind of his offense. What is it about Coach Roderick's just his play calling style that is making BYU so effective this year on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I think he uses. The same formation sometimes, but he runs a lot of different plays out of it.
Hmm.
So like in a scattering report, when you sit and watch, a lot of times when we were coaching in high school and that kind of stuff, you have formations that some teams will get into and you know exactly what's coming out of that formation.
Right.
But with BYU, he's very good at changing plays up. So he's bringing out different plays out of the same formations, and he's very good at changing up what he does week to week. So you can't really get a solid beat on what he does because he's done a very good job of changing things up and using things different ways. And he makes a really good decision when he has the players that he does to put them in the right spots to make plays against the defenses that they play against.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really fun having Coach Roger down there, at least for us BYU fans. It's interesting to see kind of the difference in his time at Utah versus his time here at BYU, you know, successful at both, but obviously he's making a little bit more of a name for himself down here, I think. But, just really quick, I've had you on the phone for a little bit here. On the other side of the ball, or other side of the field, I guess, other sideline, do you have any thoughts about Jay Hill's defense for the Cougars?
Oh, it's solid. I think Glasker, hopefully he's healthy for BYU fans anyway. I know he got a little dinged up in the last game, but I haven't heard anything if he's not playing or that kind of stuff.
I think he'll be healthy.
Yeah, with Coach Hill, he comes from the same tree that Coach Whittingham had. He played for Coach Whittingham. He coached for Coach Whittingham. And so I think he has a lot of the same tendencies, and he does run a different defense than Utah does, but he still has that same mentality of bringing pressure. And you see that with linebackers and different blitzes that he uses it down there as well.
Yeah. You mentioned maybe you don't see as much on the defensive side of the ball for the Cougars. Do you think you'd be able to speak at all as to, again, what the Cougars do well or where they're weak?
You know, I don't know about weaknesses for BYU. When I have watched their defense, Glasker is the guy. He is the man. Yeah. He is so good. Their other linebacker is
Jack Kelly, number good 17. As well.
Yeah, but I think that Glasker is the man, and he's going to make a lot of money playing on Sundays.
What is it?
Years, I'm sure.
What is it that you like so much about Isaiah Glasker from a coaching perspective?
Just his speed and how he reacts to the ball wherever it is. And if you watch BYU's defense, he is always running.
Mm.
I don't know if that guy ever takes a playoff. I don't know if he ever loafs to the ball. He is going 100 miles an hour all the time. And I think that's how he's always played, even when he was playing high school football.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely is. He leads emotionally and he leads with effort. He's definitely one of the guys that if he's out there on the field, you feel a lot more confident. Last question for you that I have, just in regards to defensive strategies in general. You know, you might not watch as much of BYU's defense, but one of the strengths they've had over the last year, not only in this year so far, but last year, is their ability to create turnovers. Until a couple weeks ago, when their freshman quarterback Bear Bachmeyer started throwing a couple more interceptions, they were leading the country, or at least they were like top six in turnovers last year. I think they were top five in turnovers. They get a little bit of flack for playing against teams, you know, some teams this year that are lower talent level. They're not quite as challenging as teams that maybe Utah would have played. But do you think, can turnovers just happen? Or is it, if you're leading, you know, top five in college football in turnovers, is that something internal that Coach Hill has had an effect on? Is it just luck? Is it just the way the ball happens to bounce? What's going on there?
No, I think it is coached. And once again, I think that Coach Hill has got that from Coach Whittingham. When he was there, they were always good at turnovers. They go after the ball when it's in the air or when they try to take away from a running back, anything like that. They're always focused on turnovers and getting the ball. Coach Hill's the same way.
Gotcha. How do you go about that more specifically? How do you take a defense that has not really done a good job at creating turnovers or getting the ball for their offense? How do you do that? How do you create that mentality, or how do you create habits or just awareness of how to get that football from the offensive side of the ball?
You have to practice it. And I'm sure that they do down at BYU. They practice. I'm sure they have a turnover circuit or whatever they do in practice where they see the ball in a certain hand and they know to punch it. They know to strip it. They know to go after it. I'm sure they do ball drills with their defensive backs where they're contested and they go up and get the ball at the highest point and all that kind of stuff. You do their hands drills to catch the ball. Hmm. And that's just something you have to do in practice. If you don't do it, it doesn't matter if it's offense or defense. If you don't do stuff in practice,
it's not gonna
and
happen.
It becomes part of your mentality, it's not going to happen on a Friday night or Saturday night, no matter if you're playing high school or college.
Yeah.
You have to do it in practice to get that mentality.
So kind of conversely speaking, if something happens on the field and it happens consistently enough, you can pretty much bet that it's something that's been practiced or drilled a lot of the time.
Oh yeah, definitely. Cool. And I think one of the things that Coach Maddich always said when we were coaching together. Oh, and by the way, he's not retired. He's coaching at Skyline now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's coaching. His son is a freshman at Skyline, so he's the head coach of the Skyline freshman team now.
Oh, that's good to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but one of the things that we always talked about when we got together as coaches and watched film and we saw something that our own players were doing that we didn't like, Coach Maddich would always say, you're either coaching it that way or you're allowing it to happen that way.
Yeah.
And so if you see something on the field that you don't like, if you don't fix it, it's your own fault and you're allowing it to happen. But if you're coaching things the right way during the week, then you're going to see things happen on game nights that are the way you want it to be done, and you'll probably be successful in what you're doing.
Yeah. I was probably never a subject of any of those conversations though, huh?
Oh, no. We were just lucky to get you on the field because you were so weak.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, Coach.
You know you were one of the best.
Well, hey, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come chat. You know, this is a labor of love. Really enjoy it. It's a fun way to stay involved in football for me, you know, not having time to necessarily go coach. But, boy, it gives you the hunger. It makes you want to go back out there and get involved. But it's good to chat. I hope to hear from you soon. Hope to hear from you more frequently. Thanks for your time.
Hey, you bet. This game of football is a wonderful game. It's done a lot of things in my life and your life that I would never trade for anything.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to be on and talk about football. I love it.
Okay. Appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you later. Love you.
All right. Love you too. Go okay. Utes.
Go Cougs. Okay, you guys, so that was Coach Bowers. We really appreciate him coming on to the show, chatting with us about the defense. Now, unfortunately, I was unable to connect with any of my coaching connections who are offensive coordinators due to lack of both familiarity with the Utes and Cougars offenses and also lack of time. I don't take for granted at all just how much time it takes to coach a football team, seeing as how I spend 15 to 20 hours a week just prepping these scouting reports. They do the same thing as well as coach for another 20 hours a week, plus teaching at the school or whatever their day job is for another 40 hours a week. I mean, these guys easily put in 60 or 70 hours a week. At the end of today's episode, I'll include earlier in the conversation with Coach Bowers before we started recording, where he and I were talking a little bit about what it takes for these coaches to get their film exchanged, watched, scouting reports prepped, etc. Either way, seeing as how we don't have an OC to run us through with offensive strategies of the Holy War tomorrow, I will do my best to give it a whirl. Now, generally, we have heard, you know, about both BYU and Utah's offenses. Schematically, both teams run primarily out of shotgun. Not a lot of pistol lineups, not a lot of under center, ace formations, stuff like that. They are both run-first offenses who have substantial contributions from their dual-threat quarterbacks who have almost as many touchdowns on the ground as they do through the air. The difference here is in the size and the style of running that these guys do. Both teams run a lot of called quarterback keepers, and I'd be interested to see if both of these teams, Utah and BYU, are able to make it through the season with their quarterbacks fully intact. Devin Dampier for Utah is smaller, faster, more agile. His running is typically done on the edges with a lot of cutbacks, missed tackles, and with speed. His ability to cut back is a major strength, but when he tends to overdo it, it leads to a lot of movement, but not necessarily for a lot of gain. However, there are times when, like we saw this last week against Arizona State, the cutbacks can be absolutely detrimental to the defense's ability to get him on the ground. Conversely, freshman quarterback Barrett Bachmeier for BYU takes a more, we'll call it, straightforward approach. He is larger, taller, less agile, but he's by no means slow. He's less able to juke or spin out of contact, which can lead him to getting tackled more frequently for a loss on a play than Devin Dampier. But his size, his strength, his speed, and his general relish for fullback-like contact makes him exceedingly hard to bring down if he gets a head full of steam. He is more likely to run between the tackles. From a throwing perspective, both quarterbacks can get it done. I will say this, I think Devin has the edge. Even though Bear has thrown for more yards, Devin is more efficient, and he has better fundamentals. He gets his feet set, and boy, does he launch it, even when it's a short to a medium length throw. He really gets his shoulder behind it. Bear is much more likely to wing it off of one foot or to be, running while he's throwing. And also, he's more likely to throw it behind his receiver, unfortunately. Both teams have solid running backs, though BYU, with slightly less depth and kind of depending more consistently on LJ Martin, whereas Utah will split reps between New Mexico transfer Nakari Rogers and Wazoo transfer Wayshawn Parker. They've also seen some more speed on the edge from freshman running back number 13, Daniel Bray. Utah likes a lot of standard downhill runs, zone reads, read options, jet midline options. They will run outside occasionally, around the end with end around plays or sweeps, but they mostly rely on quarterback scrambling on passing plays to get any sort of rushing production on the outside. BYU, on the other hand, is much more likely to run outside, either with their running backs or especially with their wideouts. They also like running between the tackles with the same variety of option and zone running plays as Utah. I do think that BYU gets a little more creative with their running schemes. They'll run things like trap and down, certain types of dives that Utah doesn't really touch. And just as Utah has more depth in the running back room, BYU has that much depth in the receiving core with guys like number 2 Chase Roberts, number 11 Parker Kingston, and Utah transfer tight end number 20 Carson Ryan. Utah instead depends primarily on UNM transfer number 9 Ryan Davis, with some respectable contributions from tight end number 88 Dallin Bentley and wide receiver number 18 Tobias Merriweather. Now, not only is BYU more variable in their rushing strategy, but they're more variable in their passing schemes as well. Aaron Roderick loves to throw downfield. He has embraced kind of the sexy side of throwing the football, deep post routes, dig routes, which again is a deep 15 to 20 yard in route, corner routes, etc. He will run spot passes, screen passes, you name it. This is a more challenging offense to run, and in the hands of a freshman quarterback who's been more prone to making mistakes the last 2 weeks, you might wonder how wise it is to throw this much variability at him, but still, I think Bear has risen to the occasion, given that extremely deep receiver room that can help him out. On the other hand, Utah is much more vanilla, relies on more consistent production from shorter, safer routes that result in a higher completion percentage. Devin completes about 8% more passes than Bear, which I think this is a smart strategy, considering that Devin's talent lies in his feet and his ability to move around and to move defensive backs around until Ryan Davis can get open. It's a lot of hitches, out routes, slants, and the occasional deep ball. Utah's offensive line is the more highly touted front, for sure. They have guys like Spencer Fano and Jared Kump, who are projected to go in the first round of the next NFL draft. But BYU's offensive line is nothing to ignore. Utah has given up 3 sacks, whereas BYU has given up 5. Slightly more, but pretty close. BYU certainly has more of a tendency to run trick plays on the offensive side of the ball. Double passes, reverses, fake punts, fake field goals, you name it. If you can think of it, BYU probably has some variation of it in their trick playbook. And if I'm Jason Beck for Utah, I maybe try to take a leaf out of BYU's book and surprise them with a trick play early, try to beat them at their own game. I need to stop. I honestly could go on for hours about this. Take what you will away from this, but what I take away, you know, from this kind of offensive and defensive discussion are these following points for each team. For Utah, on the offensive side of the ball, the first and only point I'm going to make is can Utah's all-star offensive line live up to the hype? Can they get the job done behind enemy lines? They struggled in their last big game against Texas Tech, and look at the outcome. If Spencer Fano and his boys can live up to the expectations that have been set before them, Utah's skilled players should flourish. On the defensive side of the ball for Utah, we're going bear hunting. Does Morgan Scalley's defense have what it takes to stop one of the most productive offenses in college football? Well, before the second quarter in Tucson last week, BYU had scored 30 consecutive quarters. The answer to that, can you stop that? The answer lies in your ability to get to the bear. For BYU offensively, team effort. Utah, this is a shout out for Eric Christensen, by the way. Christensen? I still don't know. Utah is going to come after BYU's freshman quarterback. He is the king piece in chess, and the queen, the rooks, the knights, the bishops, pawns, all have to play a part. If everyone can chip in, Utah will have a hard time stopping BYU's explosive offense. Defensively for BYU, I have 2 points. Stay in your lane. Do not allow yourselves to be undisciplined in your pursuit of Devin Dampier, speaking specifically of the defensive line and maybe the linebackers. If they can stay in their rush lanes and collapse the pocket onto him, don't try to race around the corner to get him. He's faster than you. If they can do that, they'll be successful in shutting him down. And then last thing, all hats to the ball and wrap up tackling. These are two of the most basic fundamental defensive principles in football. And if we can do, if BYU can do that, those two keys will limit big plays. At the end of the day, this game will go down as another unforgettable showdown and a long series of epic battles between the two sides of a holy battle between red and blue. My gut is telling me that it will be close. After tomorrow, I predict that BYU will be able to register a new website as they collect their third consecutive W against the Utes. My prediction is something close, like 24-20. But with this rivalry, you never really know. I'm looking forward to the Big Noon kickoff show tomorrow. Looking forward to warmer weather than last week, fall football, going to the game with my awesome wife, downing a cougar tail and a tall glass of graham cracker milk. Just having a great time in what I think is the greatest football atmosphere this side of the Mississippi. You heard it here. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. Go Utes, go Cougs. We will see you next week. Okay, you guys, so as I mentioned to you, I'm going to include on the back end of this episode just a little bit of the kind of behind-the-scenes conversation with Coach Bowers. I kind of jumped in the recording of our conversation halfway through, so I have to give a little bit of context. We were talking about what it takes to get the film, you know, recorded during the game on a Friday night for the, you know, Friday Night Lights and high school football. And Coach Bowers mentioned to me that they'd usually finish the game, we'd get all in the huddle, they'd give us our little post-game speech. Usually, hopefully, it was a good uplifting, you know, talk and encouraging us after we won the game or whatever. They'd send us on our way, and then the coaches would immediately pretty much go get the film from the film crew. They'd take it, and they'd somehow get it onto either DVD or tape or just be able to watch it, and they'd go get dinner together. They'd talk about the game. They'd watch the film either together or they'd make copies of that film and go watch it that night. They'd break it down, maybe watch it maybe once or twice all the way through, watch the entire 2 or 3 hour game that night, and then wake up very early the next morning to have us all ready for film review on Saturday morning back at the school. And I think that's when we kind of jump into the conversation here. He talks about the process of getting your film to your opposing school for the next week's game. So here's where we are.
Over there, and then we'd go home and watch it for I usually watch the game at least twice through that night. But just the defense. I didn't watch any of the offense.
Right, which that speeds it up, but.
Yeah, but then when we would usually get film, I think the rule was we had to have it by 11 or 12 the next morning. And that's when we had to send our film out.
Like on Saturday, you mean?
Yeah. Yep. So 11 a.m. Saturday morning, I think that's when we had to have it sent. But it was harder at Park City because back then we didn't have huddle.
Right.
So like when we play Union or whoever it was, Brandon would have to drive and go meet him halfway in Duchesne or whatever it was and pick up a VCR tape. And then come back and we'd throw the tape in a dubbing machine and make a bunch of copies and then hand them out. And then we'd go watch it for the rest of the weekend. But my family knew Saturday afternoons until Sunday night late, they wouldn't see me. I'd be on my computer the whole time.
That's so wild.
Just constant for probably 36 hours.
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing like, you know, I still work from, you know, on Mondays I'm a little bit shorter. So like I work from 7 to 1:30 on Mondays and Fridays. But then, you know, the rest of the week I'm working until 6 or 7 and you get home and it's like you got to do dinner and all that stuff. And then I'm staying up watching film until like 1 or 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Doing these scouting because I'm doing offense and defense for both Utah and BYU's opponents. It's
right.
It's freaking wild. I don't know how you guys did it.